everybody. Welcome to another week of Magic the Amateuring and another week of Magic the Gathering and another week of
our life
on this planet. This
cherish it. It could end at any moment. That's a warning. That is a warning.
Maria, please don't threaten our listeners.
I'm just like the crazy guy in the back of the bus.
I feel like I have to remind you every week not to try and murder the people who support us.
I'm not trying to murder them. I'm saying beware.
Well, it sounds like you're threatening
them. Just watch out. That's all I'm saying.
Well, if you've listened before, then I'm sorry that Maria has once again threatened you.
A threat that will not hold up in court, that was a threat.
If you are new to the podcast, this is Magic the Amateuring.
Welcome.
It's a podcast for players new to the game of Magic, players returning to the game of Magic, and anyone who likes to laugh out of their mouth
while
listening to the podcast through their ears.
That sounds so straightforward. How can you say it like that?
It is what it is.
Painful.
I'm a facts-based person.
Painful. Everybody, I'm so happy you're here. Megan and I learned to play Magic the Gathering about 2 years ago, and we're here to impart that knowledge onto you and also to impart our questions onto you.
That's right. Wow. 2 whole years almost.
That's so weird.
Oh my God. I think it is. October is like when we like just yes. like picked up our first Magic decks.
And yes.
Like,
quick. Let's look up when our first show was so we can tell this. Who knows?
Our first show is in December.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Because it wasn't until later.
Okay. Well, it's going to be close. We got our anniversary coming up. Yeah, guys, really exciting show for you today. We're going to talk about Pro Tour Cons of Tarkir. Just happened this past weekend. There's some spicy new deck action all up in this bitch. So we're really excited to share with you some of these deck lists.
Absolutely. We also have a couple of questions that we're going to answer. And for the noobs, we'll talk about our sealed and draft experiences in the past few weeks.
And at the end of the show, Megan will make out with one listener.
That's not true.
Megan, it's through
we don't even have one here.
You know, I know. I'm just saying, when have you been a no person?
I wouldn't.
That's what you say now.
Nope, I'm meaning it.
Our hotties with bodies.
Put my foot down. All right.
They might be into that.
This mouth was made for talking and not to strangers.
I just wanted to say thank you, by the way, to everybody who's donated to us on Patreon so far. If you haven't, head to patreon.com/mtacast and you can pledge a certain dollar amount per show that we release, as low as $1.
That's just $4 simple a month, $8 simple every 2 months, $40 simple every 10 months. God. 48 simple dollars every year.
I just want to ask you, what's the last thing that you spent a single solitary dollar on in this life? You can't think of it because nothing costs a dollar.
Well.
What?
Okay.
A gumball?
Like a granola bar.
Oh, sure. I'd say we're a granola bar quality.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather listen to this podcast again than eat a granola bar once a week.
Yeah, me too.
They're all kind of dry.
Yeah, they cut up your mouth sometimes.
Exactly.
Mm-mm.
Me and Megan. I always get Nature Valley because I feel like they're the healthiest kind.
Oh.
But they're also like the crunchiest and the cut your mouth the most.
We're the only protein you listeners will ever need.
That's right.
And I'm saying that because I can, because I am a medical doctor.
We're also a great source of B12.
So, if you're up for it, head to patreon.com/mtacast. We only need 8 more people to pledge $1 per episode, and we'll get to our first level of awesome, I don't want to say rewards, it's like our bonus
goals.
Level. Our goals, Our first goal level, so that'll be really, really cool. So, check it out, if only to watch the funny video that we have up there for you guys.
Yes. For the noobs.
So, you guys, if you have a question for us, Megan and I are like wise old owls. We'll answer it for you. And we had a listener email into us. Megan, remind the listeners of our email address, please.
We also eat mice. MagicTheAmateuring@gmail.com. Send us a message.
We scat in the woods as well.
They're the ones that barf.
What?
Yeah, owls barf up those little owl pellets.
Oh, yeah, with the bones of mice in them? Yeah,
exactly. And then seventh graders dissect them.
Oh, man, those were the days.
Exactly. That is exclusively why owls barf pellets, so that seventh graders can dissect them.
So true. So Josh sent us in this email. He had a question regarding act of treason. And actually, it was an interesting email because it brought up several questions within his within his letter. So we've got some stuff to dive into here for you noobs out there. Mm-hmm. Put your noob ears on. All right, and turn up your
Hey, just you listen. Said ears.
Oh no!
Yes! Hold on. That was the sound of me high-fiving myself.
Dang it. Yes. I was so close to never saying that word. Okay. So he's recently got back into the game, FYI everybody. He says we're doing the Lord's work. Yeah. Which is so true, because earlier I turned magic cards into wine. Okay. I'm hoping you ladies can solve this problem. During our game last night, I played Act of Treason against one of my opponent's 5/5 creatures. I played this card during my second main phase after combat, just to, you know, twist the knife a little bit. Okay, we have an issue with that right away, but let's continue. He argued that playing this card in my second main phase creates an attacker, and that I would be technically playing this card after my declare attacker step. Well, yeah, that's definitely true. And therefore would be playing it illegally. Now, I know that's wrong, because, come on, that's just wrong. My problem is I'm not finding anything on Wizard's site that explains that I either played this card legally or illegally. I don't even know that you can technically play a sorcery once that combat phase has begun. Correct. However, he did seem to have a strong point for arguing that I was essentially creating a second combat phase after my main combat phase because I was attacking and dealing damage again with a creature that was undeclared. Holy cow, this is really going off the rails. And that sounds pretty illegal. So, does using Act of Treason in my second main phase cause a second combat phase? If so, is that legal? And does casting that go on the stack and able to be responded to? Am I an idiot for playing in my second main phase? Oh, wow, there's a lot of questions.
Yeah, these are a lot of questions. Well, let's start off at the top by just, I'm going to read the text on Act of Treason.
Okay.
It's a sorcery.
Yep.
So that does mean that it can only be cast during your own main phase on an empty stack.
Either of your main phases, technically.
Yep, your first or second, technically. And it can't be in response to anything. There cannot be any spells on the stack when you have when you cast Act of Treason. So... sorcery, gain control of target creature until end of turn. Untap that creature. It gains haste until end of turn.
So let's start out by saying, what is the situation that you would use Act of Treason in? Why would you play this card?
Well, Act of Treason often goes in a lot of aggressive decks because, you know, they're just looking to swing in that final few points of damage. And maybe their opponent has, you know, established a board and they've started attacking and they've only left one blocker back. Maybe they've really spent time developing their board, or they're taking their time about it and they only have one blocker, period. You can steal it and then use that to swing across the final few points of damage, kind of like in a sudden, aha, move.
Right. So it's basically a very tricky card in that you need some reach for your aggressive deck. You take their biggest guy, or say their only blocker or a good blocker, and you hit them in the face with their own blocker.
That's right. And then you have to give it back. Just like any time you hit someone with a stick, you then have to return the stick to the person who you hit it
with. That's the price you have to pay, because you might then get smacked in the face with a stick that you just hit your brother with.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a parable from the Bible.
Yeah, it's also how my mom always enforced discipline between my brother and I. I sure learned not to hit him with sticks. Just saying.
Yeah, see? So, Act of Treason, it's a card you normally, I would say, you don't play it all the time.
No, not, definitely. Sure. It's not something that every deck wants. It's not even something that every red deck wants.
Yeah.
But it is a card that has a home in some very aggressive decks that, like you said, are looking to push across the last few points of damage. Most of them will still only run one copy.
Yeah.
You'll rarely ever see two. Oh, last in Journey into Nyx, we had Strived Act of Treason, Harnessed by Force.
Ah, yes, that card is awesome.
Which was pretty sweet, because that was one red. And then to take a creature, and for two red, you could strive it and take another creature.
Take two creatures.
So that was really like, that was like the boss stab of all Act of Treasons. And did the job, you know, a little bit better.
So what we're saying is this card is there is absolutely, that I can see, unless you have a sack outlet, no reason to cast Act of Treason in your second main phase.
Yes, because to go back and answer your question, so casting Act of Treason doesn't actually create an attacker. It merely gives you a creature that can attack if you choose to do so during your regular combat phase.
Yeah, you don't even have to attack with it if you don't want to.
Exactly. I don't know
why you wouldn't. But
that's up to you. We don't want to run your life. You know, you make your own decisions. But, you know, it's so it doesn't, and nowhere on the card text does it say that this creature has to attack.
Must attack.
That it already is attacking. Even if Act of Treason had, like, let's slap some end text on there. This creature must attack this turn. Even if you cast this during your second main phase,
It still wouldn't be able to.
It wouldn't be able to attack. It would have to attack if it was during your combat phase, but it doesn't have to attack, like, period. It has to attack, comma, if it is during your regular combat phase.
So I like the question you have, which is, am I creating an additional combat step? Because I think that's very creative thinking.
Mm-hmm.
However, the rules are just that. They are the rules, and they are hard and fast, and there is one combat phase. And no matter what, you cannot create another one.
We don't accept creative thinking here at Hogwarts School of Magic the Gathering.
No, put it back in your pocket. All those creative brains.
Exactly.
So yeah, I get where you're coming from.
Yes, and that would be super sweet if you were able to do that.
That would be pretty sweet.
But it does not, in fact, happen.
No.
So Act of Treason is the thing you will usually want to cast during your first main phase.
Mm-hmm.
So that then when your combat step comes along, you have this creature untapped, hasted, ready to go and hit your opponent.
And of course, when you cast this card in your first main phase, your opponent does have the chance to cancel it or to play a spell in response to it, as they do with any card that you cast.
An instant. They can play an instant.
Yeah, an instant. They can cast an instant to get rid of this dude. But if it resolves, that's the way of the world. You've now got their dude for a turn, and they get their dude back at the beginning of their next turn, which is immediately after the end of your turn.
Wait, when do they get it back? They get it back at the end of the turn.
End of the turn, okay.
Yes, at the end of the turn. However, maybe sometimes they don't get it back.
Because why?
Because maybe that creature, when it attacks, has an ability on it that says when this creature attacks for the first time, exile it.
Or sacrifice it, like Mardu Blazebringer.
Oh, yeah. There you go. That's another one, or Mardu Blazebringer. Although that one would be after it attacks.
Yeah.
So the creature that I'm thinking of, Maria.
What?
Is our friend Dirtle Turtle.
Turtle, turtle! Do you guys like this turtle? He's so cool. He costs only 5 and he's a 5/9 turtle. So, 3 green green for this friend, our turtle.
Yeah, so he's a 3 green green.
What's his real name?
Meandering Tower Shell.
Okay, I just call him Dirtle Turtle.
Creature Turtle. He's a 5/9 with Island Walk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... So his text reads, whenever Meandering Tower Shell attacks, exile it. Return it to the battlefield under your control, tapped and attacking at the beginning of the declare attacker's step on your next turn. So what would happen?
Confusing.
Yeah. So if you say I Act of Treason this.
Okay.
And
FYI,
then,
this happened to me. Everybody, this happened to me.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
So I go, you know, I Act of Treason it, and it's hasted. It's untapped. It's ready to attack. I move to combat and I attack with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it says right on the card, whenever it attacks, exile it.
Yep. There it goes.
I exile it.
Bye-bye, turtle.
Goodbye, turtle. And when the end of the turn comes around, Act of Treason is like, hey, where's that creature? You got to give it back. But Act of Treason doesn't see the creature.
Right.
It's like, oh, well, the creature's not around, so too bad. It's just the same as if you had a sacrifice outlet.
Yeah, and
or if that creature had died in combat.
The turtle, yep.
Exactly. The turtle would be, the creature would be, you know, it's just like, oh, too bad, it died, it's gone. And then at the beginning of my next turn, or my next combat, Meandering Tower Shell comes back.
You know,
and is attacking.
I was so hopeful that it would come back to me.
Nope.
But it did not.
Nope. But at the end, and at the end of the turn, there's no act of treason to be like, hey, give that turtle back. It's just like, oh, here's that. Oh, here's the turtle.
I missed my turtle.
What would be really interesting is if it said, return it to the battlefield under its controller's control.
Its owner's control.
Or its own. That's what. Thank you. Its owner's control. At the beginning of the next end, or at the beginning of the next attack of the next declare attackers, because then it would go back to you and on your next attack. But it, because it just says return it to the battlefield under your control.
Yep.
It's like, oh, who's exiling it? Megan's exiling it.
She's back.
I'll come back to her. Thank you, faithful little turtle.
This turtle is not loyal. This turtle is a cheat and a liar.
No, the turtle is super faithful. It's just also dumb.
Slow and dumb, just how I like him.
Oh, you're the last person I remember. Hey, buddy.
Turtle, hey, buddy. No.
I actually had a really interesting interaction kind of like this yesterday.
Yeah.
I was playing some Constructed, and I was playing Jeskai Burn, or Jeskai Tempo, as it's known. And my opponent was playing Sultai, and he cast Villainous Wealth on me.
Sick.
Motherfucker.
Sick.
Cast it for 5, and he gets a Seeker of the Way, and a Goblin Rabble Master, and a Magma Jet.
Mm.
And these, right, Villainous Wealth, you get to cast these things.
Girl.
You just get to cast them for free. So he plays my Rabble Master and my Seeker and Magma Jets my face, which I don't appreciate. And at the end of my turn, I have a Jeskai Charm in hand. And Jeskai Charm says, put target creature on top of its owner's deck. Or something along those lines.
Yeah.
But the point is that it has that text that it's not its controller's deck, it's its owner's deck. So at the end of the turn, I Jeskai Charmed my own Goblin Rabble Master, and it went back on top of my deck.
Sure.
Even though my opponent was the one controlling it.
Yep.
So because Meandering Tower Shell just says under your control, that's why the Act of Treason bit works.
Right.
Because it's like, derp-de-derp, attack, exile myself. Act of Treason's like, the creature's gone. You don't get it back. And then the next attack, the turtle's like, derp de derp, here I come.
Derp derp derp. This turtle is the derpiest card. All right, listeners.
Oh, but he's so cute.
Will you please tweet at us at MTAcast, the derpiest cards of all history of Magic. If you have a favorite derp card, please let us know. It can be from the art. It can just be that it seems derpy overall.
Yeah.
Please tweet
what
at
it
us
is derpy.
MTAcast. I would love to have a... I just want to see a library of derps.
You want to have a library of the derpiest cards in Magic history? That sounds reasonable. That sounds like a good goal.
I'm so excited for this assignment, you guys. Go and find me derpy cards. This is exciting. Oh, boy. So anyway, a complicated question. We gave you another little... We put a little bit of expert level complication in there, talking about Dirtle Turtle. But, you know, overall, you're free to cast Act of Treason, your second main phase, and you're definitely not having another declare attackers or attack step, although you did it pretty much for no reason, unless you could have sacrificed their dude or caused it to, you know, exile itself after combat or whatever. You didn't really get anything out of it, so...
You wanna hear some interesting rulings about Meandering Tower Shell?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Also, so just going back real quick, if you were to use something like Whip of Erebos,
sure,
on a turtle that had died for some reason and was in your graveyard, you would whip it back.
Yeah.
You could attack with it, but the turtle would exile itself.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the turn, the whip would look for it and it wouldn't be there.
And the whip would find it.
And then on the next turn, the turtle would come back. Attacking.
Oh, nice.
And then the whip wouldn't exile. You'd just get that turtle.
Oh,
back.
That's pretty cool.
Exactly. Ghost Dad kind of had a similar thing. What was it?
Council of Obsidot?
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah.
Obsidot Ghost Council. There
that's
we go.
It.
Yeah. Had a similar thing.
Ghost Dad.
You could exile it at the end of turn, and then it would exile before the whip. It fulfilled the same sort of, it has to be exiled. Let's see. So here's some interesting rulings having to do with Raid on the one hand. On the turn Meandering Tower Shell attacks and is exiled, Raid abilities will see it as a creature that attacked.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
It will trigger Raid.
Mm-hmm.
But on the turn that it enters the battlefield attacking, it does not count towards
that
raid.
Is bullshit.
But because it's never declared
it's
as an attacker.
Declared. Yeah, I get it.
It just is. Anyways, I found that entertaining
magic
while
rules.
We were looking at the rulings for Meandering
rules,
Tower
man.
Shell. I was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a good thing to point out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wish you luck, Josh, with your continued coming back to magic. And I hope you tell your opponent to go eat a dick because he was totally wrong. Don't tell him that. You'll get some kind of warning from a judge.
He's gonna hit you with a stick. On the bright side, he'll then give you that stick.
Yeah. As we've all learned here today. Pro Tour Cons of Tarkir deck lists. You guys.
Ooh.
So all the pro players in the Magic world were hanging out in Hawaii this past weekend wearing leis, laying on the beach, getting buried in sand, drinking Mai Tais, having tiki torch parties, doing the hula on top of a mountain, swimming in lava, bathing in crabs. They were doing it all.
Okay, I don't like the last two, but everything you said, like, up until then. They're eating poi.
Eating poi?
That's a thing.
Yep.
They're roasting a pig on a spit.
Eating a lot of spam. Mm. Did you know?
No, I did not know that.
Fun fact, Hawaii is the number one purchaser of spam in the entire world, Megan.
That's amazing.
Yes.
That makes me really intrigued.
Yeah, and it's because I think it tastes like pig. I don't know.
What?
There's a reason.
There's a reason? All right.
Yep.
I'm gonna look
I can't
into
remember.
This.
But yeah, Hawaii, number one in spam.
The number two purchaser of spam in the United States is my grandfather.
Oh, yeah. Have you had some good spam recipes over your life?
I've never eaten it. And my grandmother was always just like super peeved that he bought it. But he just like loved spam.
There's so many different flavors. People don't know that.
I didn't need to.
Well, I'm telling you, I had a delicious spam recipe once.
Oh, those words stumble.
I once lived.
An oxymoron. Delicious
lived,
spam recipe.
I lived in the spam capital of the world, and there was spam. They always had it everywhere. Like it was like in barbecue sauce with like a Hawaiian sweet sauce on a pretzel stick.
Just so you know,
what
if you start typing "Why do Hawaii?" the first thing that comes up in the Google search is "Why do Hawaiians love spam?"
Oh my god.
That's literally the first thing that it auto searches for. All I've typed in is "Why do Hawaii?"
Google knows.
Oh, why do Hawaiians
love
spam?
We're gonna find out for you. That's we're here for you, listeners.
Let's see.
To answer life's important questions.
Exactly.
As well as the frivolous ones.
So, in the meantime, Maria, can you tell us a little bit more about the Pro Tour for those people who don't know?
Sure, man. If you weren't watching it, what's wrong with you? Were you watching football? Get out of my life. Just kidding. It's okay. I'm down with you watching those things. But the Pro Tour was on this past weekend. And in case you don't know, you can always catch these streamed online at twitch.tv. Wizards of the Coast, I should say, streams these wonderful events for viewers. And it's a 3-day event starting on Friday, coverage on Saturday, and the top 8 on Sunday. So we saw a bunch of different decks here in the Pro Tour on Friday and Saturday. Started with draft, 3 rounds of draft, followed up by about 20 gazillion rounds of standard. And this was especially, can't believe I just said it like that, especially exciting because Cons was just finally legal for the first time in Standard, and we got to see what all the pros thought were the best decks to build in the format with these spicy new cards. And we saw a bunch of diversity, which was really exciting, actually.
Yeah, there was a lot of crazy stuff going on in the top 8, or in decks in general.
Yes.
And we're gonna now bring you a little slice of it all through talking about these top 8 deck lists.
So the overall story of the weekend, of course, we knew kind of going in was going to be Jeskai Charm.
There was Jeskai Tempo going in for sure, but there was also Abzan Midrange.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of green devotion strategies.
Yes.
Everyone was sort of waiting to see, you know, no one had quite come around to what the control deck was going to look like. So everyone was kind of excited to see the pros get their hands on the cards and really start thinking about what would a control deck in this format.
We saw Owen Turtenwald play a very cool control deck.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone from the Minneapolis area, Greg Orange.
Represent!
Who only plays control in all formats.
Yep.
Got ninth with an Esper control build.
Yep.
Which is pretty sweet. And then, you know, there was the Jeskai Ascendancy combo, which is also
viable. Did I say Jeskai Charm before? I totally meant Jeskai Ascendancy.
Okay. Yeah. Jeskai Ascendancy combo, which is pretty sweet. Pretty darn sweet. So we'll start off at the top here with Sean McLaren. I believe he won Pro Tour Born of the Gods, I want to say.
He's a Canadian.
He is?
Is he? I just said that.
You just said that? Without knowing?
I don't know. Maria. He could be. There's a chance.
Maria, we are supposed to be truthful. We are supposed.
He looks like a Canadian.
What? Everyone looks like a Canadian. Literally, everyone can look like a Canadian.
I can tell a Canadian looks alone. Also by smell. Like a Canadian. I can smell a Canadian from a mile away.
Everyone can look like a Canadian. Okay.
All right. Tell me about it. So his deck is called Jeskai Winds.
Yeah, hold on just a second.
You're trying to see if he's Canadian.
I'm trying to see if he's Canadian. I really want to figure this out first because I don't know.
No problem.
Oh, yep. Okay, so he's from Alberta.
Boom.
Okay, and he did win Pro Tour Born of the Gods. So I got that one right.
Two truths, no lies.
Two truths, no lies.
His deck is called Jeskai Winds, and I was like, why is it called Jeskai Winds?
It's a take on Red Deck Winds, which was... which is a name of one of the red decks.
Why is it called Red Deck Wins?
Because they want to win. Red Deck Wins.
Oh, my deck is called Blue Deck Loses because I want to lose. It said nobody ever.
I'm just saying. I don't know. Someone just called it that, okay? Red Deck Wins.
I'm holding you accountable.
Red Deck Wins, plays lots of tiny creatures, beats you up. Beats you up. Just beats you. All
right.
Gives you the stick back. So you can beat them. All right, so... Sean McLaren, definitely Canadian.
Definitely Canadian. Smells like one, looks like one.
What? You have not met him?
I can tell.
So he is playing Jeskai Winds.
Yep.
And his deck list includes Planeswalker to Sarkhan the Dragon Speaker.
Love you, Sarkhan.
Yeah, pretty sweet card. Obviously, 3 red, starts with 4 loyalty, Planeswalker. For +1... until the end of the turn, he becomes a legendary 4/4 red dragon creature with flying, indestructible, and haste.
He's so cool.
Whoa.
His eyes are on fire.
Yeah, or something. Something's badass. Crazy is going badass. On with him. For -3, he can deal 4 damage to a target creature. So, you know.
Sometimes he's just a removal spell.
Yeah, 4/4. But, you know, in this deck, which is really looking to beat down, he's gonna hit the table and just going to probably make himself into a dragon.
But this deck does not have a lot of differences in kinds of diversity in creatures. It has 1 Seeker of the Way, 4 Goblin Rabble Masters, and then 4 Mantis Riders plus Sarkhan. Yep. So that's it as far as creatures go, but all those creatures are really good.
Yeah, Goblin Rabble Master, if he goes unanswered, can just cause just a shit ton of problems.
And I love Mantis Rider in this deck. Just some guy riding in on his mantis with haste.
Exactly.
Boom, 3 in the face.
Yeah, it's really sweet because, you know, at the very least, it usually gets in for 3.
Right. And so then you're also running some burn as well, such as Lightning Strike. Got 4 of those, 4 Magma Jets, 4 Jeskai Charms.
Yeah.
We've got Stoke the Flames and Dig Through Time. That's not pretty.
Yes. So Sean McLaren's desk went deeper on Dig Through Time than any of these Jeskai lists that we had seen yet.
Okay.
With 4 Dig Through Time. The card is sweet.
Yeah, it's super good.
It is. Delve. You know. It is.
Does it have delve?
Yep, it's 6 blue for an instant with delve.
Okay.
So every card that you exile pays for a colorless. Look at the top 7 cards of your library.
7.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Put 2 of them into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order.
So do you like
bonkers.
Question in a vacuum? Yeah. Do you want Dig Through Time or do you want Treasure Cruise?
Dig Through Time.
In draft, same answer.
Ooh. God, probably Dig Through Time. Yeah,
probably. Dig Through Time. I agree.
I mean, it's just the fact that you get to look at 7 and pick any 2.
Yeah.
Any 2.
Pretty good.
You can just cherry pick whatever I need.
You know what's a mini Dig Through Time?
What?
Bitter Revelation.
Oh, Bitter Revelation. Pretty sweet.
Because you look at 4.
You sure do. 2. Yeah, man. And this, you know, this deck is often going to be able to cast Dig Through Time, heavily discounted with Delve, because it is casting all of these Lightning Strikes, Magma Jets, etc., etc. It's also playing two Anger of the Gods.
Sure.
You know, gets a little awkward if it kills your own creatures, but, you know, sometimes that's what happens.
Is that in the main?
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
Yep. Two in the main, and then two Banishing Light also.
Okay.
And then, you know, obviously playing...
This deck seems fun.
A lot of different lands. Just lands. Dig Through Time went up about $15 overnight.
Did it really?
Yeah, from Friday to Saturday.
Wow.
So, oh boy.
Hold on to those kids.
Yeah, ma'am.
Wow. Well, that deck seems really fun, actually. Very kind of aggro-y, very kind of tempo-y, just kind of beaten.
Basically, you just want to keep their board clear. You want to stay ahead on board. And then, yeah, you know, pretty good. And then you just, you know, once, someday you do get behind on board. Someday it happens. And then you just try and burn their face.
Yeah.
You just kind of hope that it's like, hopefully I've done enough damage and I can dig through time and find the right burn spells and just burn their face until they're dead.
What else did we see in this top eight that was fun and exciting? Magon?
Let's see. We see Even Flock. He was the winner of Pro Tour Magic 2015 just recently. Pretty darn sweet.
With his Flock deck that included a lot of sheep.
That's right. He was playing a blue-white planar cleansing control. Where his only win condition in his main deck was one Elixir of Immortality.
And stealing the opponent's win condition and using it against them.
Oh, that's true. He could also Ultimate Jace. But, I mean, that's just like, if you really need to. I mean, the real win is when your opponent concedes.
What a horrible deck.
I think you mean amazing, so okay. he is again playing control, but this is straight blue-black control.
Yeah, featuring Granddaddy Sphinx here.
That's right. His only creature's four Granddaddy Sphinxes, Prognostic Sphinx. You know, such a sweet card.
Yeah.
It's a 3 blue-blue for a flyer.
I love that. That is his only
3/5 flyer. His only one. His only
God.
One. Discard a card. It gains hexproof until end of turn.
That thing needs to hit you a bunch of times before
it
you
sure
lose.
Does. It really does. But you know what? With this deck, you got all the time in the world.
Okay.
That's what you're hoping for.
Except, you know, don't time yourself out.
That's true. Whenever it attacks, you could scry 3. So, you know, I mean, if you're going to have 4 of a creature, it's pretty solid. Pretty solid. Then his instants include 4 Dig Through Time. We see that card once again. 4 Dissolve, straight up counterspell. 4 Disdainful Stroke, that 1 and a blue for countering a spell with converted mana cost 4 or greater.
P.S. I like this card in draft.
Okay, I know that you just said P.S., but it super sounded like you said penis.
Penis, I like this card in draft.
Disdainful Stroke is a solid card. Real good. I think. Very good.
Penis, I agree with you.
Listeners, I dare you sometime in the near future when you're going to say P.S. instead, just see if you can get away with it. Just see if you can get away with
just
saying.
Just write it at the bottom of the email. Penis. Instead of P.S.
Okay, I don't know how you can get away with that.
P.S. Penis.
4 Heroes Downfall, 3 Bile Blight, and 2 Silence the Believers. So just kill everything. He's really on the kill
what
everything plan. He also has 4 Despise.
Yeah.
This is an exciting card. It's a single black mana for a sorcery. Target opponent reveals his or her hand. You may choose a creature or planeswalker card from it. That player discards that card.
And 2 Thoughtseize. All right, yeah. So this deck sounds like just a joy to play against.
Yeah.
And by joy,
kill
I
all
mean,
your things.
What a horrible nightmare.
Kill your stuff. Play
but what's,
no permanents.
What's interesting is that the deck we just got done talking about, it can't deal with this 3/5 very easily.
No.
It cannot lightning
no, it really
bolt at
can't.
This. It cannot stoke the flames.
No,
this.
It really can't.
It's going to need that... What was it? Detention Sphere? That's not what it was.
Banishing Light?
Banishing Light.
Yeah, can't do that either.
Oh, boy, because this guy can just get hexproof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, I don't know that Blue-Black Control has a great matchup against Jeskai Temple.
Because they just don't care about this guy. They just hit him anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is at 5 mana.
Sure.
You know, and obviously, Even's doing a lot to make sure that he lives to see 5, or hopefully lives to see way beyond 5. But, you know, yesterday we saw Owen Turtenwald lose, playing for top 8 to to a Jeskai tempo deck.
Right.
Because it's just sort of, you know, they have so much just straight burn. And in that case, you know, even Disdainful Stroke doesn't answer a lot. Hero's Downfall doesn't answer a lot. Silence the Believers is a very expensive spell. When you're, you know, and you're just killing these stupid little, like, little Mantis Riders and little Goblin Rabble Masters.
Yep.
You do have two Drown in Sorrow, which is nice. Two Bio Blight, which is nice. But, you know, it's just like they have a lot of things at their disposal to sort of just push through the last bit of damage.
Right.
And just get ya.
So Obzon Midrange was kind of a new deck that we saw.
Ari Lex. Yep. Making his first Pro Tour Top 8.
That's got some cool stuff going on, including playing Wingmate Rock, which I just love that card. Oh,
I hate this deck.
Am I right? And Force Siege Rhino?
God.
What a joy that card
Gross.
Is.
Gross. This deck is just like, you just take all the best cards and you shove them in a deck. And you're like, here it is.
Because they're also playing Sorin, Ajani, Elspeth.
Exactly.
Yeah, just you know,
you don't get dig through times. You get really efficient creatures. Like, oh, do you know what's an efficient creature? You know, a Wingmate Rock. You get 6 power of flying for 5.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Siege Rinder, you get a 4/5 for 5 and gains and drains. What an efficient card. Fuck this deck.
Why are you mad at this deck?
It's just, I just feel like it's not exciting.
Oh, come on. It plays more creatures than all the other decks.
Maria, creatures don't make things exciting.
What are you saying?
Creatures are stupid.
I love They're creatures stupid. More than anything.
It's just like I said. I just feel like it's just like they're just like, oh, look, let's take all the most efficient good cards and stick them in a deck together. Great. That sounds exciting.
We're going to have a war. Creatures versus non-creature spells.
Like, oh, look at this. 4 Thoughtseize. Great. Of course it does. Thoughtseize is great.
Megan's just mad.
4 Sylvan Carriage.
She got wrecked by this perfect. Deck. Come on.
That's true. It does. Jeskai Tempo has a pretty difficult matchup against this. Although the 4 Dig Through Time version may have a little bit better because it is able to search for pieces.
Sure.
But, you know, or the 2 Banishing Light version because it can deal with the Siege Rhino.
Bye, Siege Rhino.
Oh, that.
There's also an Obzon Aggro.
That's right. Mike Sigrist
Not
is playing.
A Canadian.
Are you like 100% sure?
Yes, he's an American.
Okay, you're right. But I just want to make sure.
I smelled him. He smelled like French fries and freedom. That's how I know he's an American.
What?
Yep.
You realize that you said he smelled French, right?
Like
he
French
smelled like French
fries and freedom.
Okay, all
and
I can
also
hear you saying
eagle
is that
droppings.
He smells like French.
Dressing.
I just like stop hearing
French dressing. That. Mike Sigrist smells like French dressing. You heard it here first.
That's weird. That's super weird.
There are way worse things to smell like than French dressing, okay?
All right. Well, he is part of a team face-to-face.
That's
so,
a Canadian team.
That is a Canadian team. So there you go.
Okay.
He is playing Abzan Aggro.
Sure.
So, hey, let's take all of the really good rate cards that are cheaper.
Megan's Jeez. Still angry at this deck.
4 Thoughtseize. Of course it's playing 4 Thoughtseize.
We've got Fleece Mane Lion coming on in here. Rakshasa, Death Dealer, Heir of the
snap.
Wilds, Anafenza, Herald of Torment, and again, Siege Rhino. This deck also seems pretty awesome.
Okay, this one's more exciting than the last one. I'll give you that. It has an Ulcerate, 3 Abzan Charm, and a Hero's Downfall.
Yeah, this deck seems kind of fun.
Yeah. It's
pretty
up your
beat
alley.
Down.
It's
I like that.
Beat down with creatures.
And Fleece Mane Lion has such great hair.
Yeah, he really does. Okay, I'll give you that.
That hair is amazing.
I want to braid that.
Oh, I bet it's so soft. I bet it's so soft like cashmere.
Aww. let's see. Then we have Andre Strosky playing again another Jeskai Winds.
Yep.
So this one doesn't have, this one has more creatures. The most exciting one that I think is in here is he has 4 Hushwing Griff.
That's so weird.
When
to turn off Siege Rhino?
It turns off Siege Rhino. It turns off Wingmate Rock.
Yep.
So if you attack, even if you have Raid, you don't get that other bird.
You're just playing a 3/4.
You just get that 3/4. I mean, a 3/4 flyer for 5. It's not
Who still gains you life, so I guess whatever. But
yeah. It also has, he has 3 Ashcloud Phoenix.
Oh.
And 2 Storm Breath Dragon.
Okay.
Which I think is, the two storm breaths is interesting because it's a little bit like Sarkhan, you know, except yeah. it just doesn't have that other mode, but it does have pro white.
But not indestructible.
And it also doesn't have, like it can't come in and deal four damage to something else instead.
Yeah, right.
But if you're in this, you know, in this aggro tempo-y deck, you're not necessarily going to want to deal four damage. He's just, you know, he's all in. He's like, you know what? I'm never going to want Sarkhan. Like, I don't need Sarkhan because I don't need him to be a, I don't need him to deal four damage. He's always just going to be a 4/4 dragon.
Yeah.
So, like, let's just get Storm Breath instead.
Interesting.
Storm Breath, you can monstrous. He does have the 3 Banishing Light.
Sure.
He doesn't have any dig through times. So that is another difference.
So his blue is basically just for Mantis Rider?
Yep.
That's it.
Pretty much.
Is that worth it?
Yeah, man.
I guess so.
Mantis Rider.
What else we got? Pretty sweet.
Tiago Saporito.
Mid-range.
Yeah. Another absent. Oh, God. You know, same. Another variation. Let's just take all the good creatures, put them in a deck. He has a little bit more. He has 2 Bile Blights.
Sure.
He only has 2 Sorin Solemn Visitor as his Planeswalkers.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's kind of. He looks almost like he's exactly split the difference.
Yeah.
Between those other 2 Abzan decks that we saw, which is pretty funny. I was just gonna look up where he was from. He's from Sao Paulo.
Oh, nice.
That's pretty cool. Nice. Let's see. Moving on. We have another Jeskai wins. This is Yuya Watanabe.
Uh-huh.
A
lot of people thinking Jeskai is the way to go, huh?
Yeah. I mean, there sure are 3 variations of this deck in the top 8, which is a lot, you know? That's...
So the difference here almost is this, as Yuya has 4 Seeker of the Way, as opposed to the one we saw previously.
That's true. He also has 3 Bramaz, King of Oreskos.
Oh, nice.
And 3 Sarkhan the Dragon Speaker.
Cool.
Again, it's just another variation. This is a little bit more similar to the ones that we had seen before. It has 2 Gods Willing to protect those creatures. And then, you know, the package of Burn. 4 Strikes, 4 Jets, 4 Jeskai Charms, 4 Stoke the Flames.
Sure.
So again, a little bit more like what we were seeing at that SCG open.
The last deck is Jeskai Ascendancy Combo.
Oh, I'm so excited for this.
So this is the deck, a version of the deck, the standard version, that's kind of trying to play off the modern version that's completely and utterly broken.
Yeah, the modern one is pretty broken. I would say that the standard deck is pretty broken too.
Really?
I mean...
Well, how come there's only 1 in the top 8?
Well, 1, not as many people were playing it. Okay. You know, you have to look at, like, percentage of the field.
Sure.
As well, which we can potentially get into next week once they have those kinds of stats out. You know, what decks were what percentages of the fields.
Okay.
Usually Patrick Chapin also does an interesting article on that after the tournament, if you'd like to look at it. So this deck abuses Jeskai Ascendancy, which is an enchantment... for blue, red, white, that says whenever you cast a non-creature spell, creatures you get control get +1/+1 until end of turn. Untap those creatures. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you may draw a card. If you do, discard a card.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to loot. And so basically it plays a bunch of mana dorks. So you have Kiora's Followers, Rattleclaw Mystics, and Sylvan Caryatids. And then it plays a bunch of ways to find this ascendancy, including commune with the gods, tormenting voice, dig its own copies of Dig Through Time. And then, you know, for Retraction Helix, which is that instant from Journey, which is a single blue mana. Until end of turn, target creature gains tap, return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand, and 2 Briber's Purse. Which are...
Tap down, dudes.
It's an artifact that costs X. Briber's Purse enters the battlefield with X gem counters on it. 1 and tap, remove a gem counter from Briber's Purse. Target creature can't attack or block this turn. But what is most important about this artifact, Maria, is that you can cast it for 0.
Yes.
So, the basic combo is like this. Is because... So I have a Jeskai Ascendancy, right?
Yeah.
And I have some number of my mana dorks in play.
Okay.
And I play a Retraction Helix on my mana dorks. First, mm-hmm. I tap them all for mana, and I play a Retraction Helix, and they all untap because of the Ascendancy.
Right.
And they all get +1/+1 because of the Ascendancy.
Mm-hmm.
Then I play this Briber's Purse for 0. Then my guy that's been Retraction Helixed, I tap it and bounce the Briber's Purse back to my hand. Then I play Briber's Purse for 0. It triggers the Ascendancy. All of my creatures get +1/+1, and they all untap. And then I tap the guy that's been Retraction Helix, and I bounce the Briber's Purse back to my hand.
Sure.
And then I play the Briber's Purse, and it triggers the Ascendancy, and all of my creatures get +1/+1.
Oh.
And then I just do that infinitely.
That's nuts.
So I can infinitely play, wow. I can give my creatures, you know, +8,000,000+8,000,000.
Wow.
Just by playing this Briber's Purse on 0 over and over and over again.
Sick.
And then eventually, because, you know, between each of the times that you play a Briber's Purse, you'll tap all three of your guys for mana. But you're playing this on 0, so you're also building infinite mana.
I think that whoever designed Briber's Purse did not see it being used for this.
I am sure. I don't even know if when they designed Jeskai Ascendancy that they realized the combo that they were making.
Yeah.
People figured that Wizards just straight up overlooked this.
Yeah.
So you generate infinite mana, and you can also, you know, be looting through your deck as much as you want in case you need anything else.
Sure.
Like this deck does run Swan Songs in the sideboard, which, so in case like someone tries to, you know, at the very end, just be like get your, like, bounce your creature, or, you know, like erase your ascendancy or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, then they Swan Song them.
You can Swan Song them. So you can get any of these pieces in the meantime that you're just to, like, shore it up. And then eventually you can use Briber's Purse. You can actually cast it for mana, and then remove their blockers. And then you swing in with your 8,000,000, 8,000,000.
Wow.
There's also Li Shixian.
What's Nissa doing in there?
So she's another way to win. One, just because she's a Nissa.
Okay.
I'm fucking baller, sure. Planeswalker.
Sure.
Anyways, you can also, so you play her.
Yeah.
And you've Retraction Helix a guy, and because she's a non-creature, she also triggers the Ascendancy, right?
Okay, sure.
So you've tapped all your guys for mana to play this Nissa. Ascendancy triggers, they all get to untap. And then you can also, you use Nissa to make one of your lands a 4/4.
Uh-huh.
And then you Retraction Helix her, you bounce her back to your hand, you recast her, and then you make another land a 4/4.
Okay.
And then you recast, and you bounce her, and you recast her, and you make another land of 4/4.
Sick.
And your 4/4s are also now getting pumped by the Ascendancy.
Wow, I want to watch this deck in action.
So you just you make all of your lands 8,000,000, 8,000,000 trampling attackers.
Wow, combo sure is fun if you can get it down.
I hope this deck wins.
Well, we don't know. Listeners out there, once again, you are smarter than us. You know who won Pro Tour Cons of Tarkir. We are recording this before the results, so we're not in the future like you, so we don't know. So we're still excited to see which one of these decks is going to take home the trophy today.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys out there know, and if you don't know, go to dailymtg.com, and you will find out within the first 5 seconds if the website isn't a piece of shit. Warning, it is.
Which is a toss-up.
You know, you're probably
so you're like 50-50 on if you'll be able to find out. So Maria, you've been doing a lot of drafting recently.
I sure have. Cons of Tarkir draft is real fun, like.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
tell me
it's
more
super
about
fun.
It.
Well, think about this. In the past, what did we have? M15, boring snooze alert.
God.
Stupid triplicate spirits. Blah, 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 blah.
But okay. That made me want to barf.
But Cons of Tarkir is very fun, very deep, and I think each of the color combinations, I'm becoming even more strong in my belief that each of them are viable in their own special way.
Yeah.
I really don't think there's a bad one, and there's also ones that aren't kind of like, aren't wedges. So here's my few thoughts. Okay, so you don't have to play a wedge, right? If you don't want to. You can also play a two-color combination.
You sure can.
And that is perfectly fine. A lot of people have been big fans of the rock, which is black-green.
Yeah.
So just go to town with that. And last night we saw a friend of the show, pro player Matthias Hunt, draft a blue-red deck that was victorious.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, black-white warriors, still a thing. Mm-hmm. Two colors, don't be afraid to experiment and try for that consistent two-color deck because it is out there. On the other side of the coin, you can play five-color good stuff.
Yeah.
I have seen that happen. I have not done it yet myself, in draft, but that's also a thing. Just take every single good card that comes to you and all the fixing.
Yeah.
If the stars align, you can have a deck that's pretty unbeatable. If you can manage to get some early guys down to block so you don't die to Mardu. Mm-hmm. If you don't die to Mardu early, chances are you're not going to die to him late.
Or Jeskai early.
Or Jeskai early, exactly. So, that's definitely the thing. Going wide is an interesting strategy, speaking of Mardu. So if you've got a number of ponyback brigades that give you a bunch of 1-1 goblins, going wide means instead of putting out just like one or two big creatures, you put out a ton of little wimpy dudes, bunch of 1-1s. Spam the board. Goblin slide, you know, not my favorite card in the world, but you've also got ponyback, which is my favorite way to do this. And then you've got a finisher like Trumpet Blast to give all your dudes +2/+0 and just kill them. But I found, guess what? You don't even need Trumpet Blast to make this deck work.
That's true. You sometimes just get them by having 8 billion goblins.
Yeah, and it just sucks because if you're on the opposite end of this deck, your card quality could be far superior. Yeah. But there's just no way to deal with this many guys.
Beat out.
Yep. Just beat out. Yeah. You guys, I built a super sweet teamer deck the other day that I was extremely proud of. It reminded me of my days back when I was playing, the Evolve deck.
Oh,
the blue-green Evolve Simic deck. I made a Simic deck back in the day, which was one of my all-time favorite draft decks that I basically thought could not lose. It was so good. And this teamer deck that I made, I just loved it so much, nearly as much as that Simic deck. I don't think it quite got there, but you can head to Twitter, follow us at MTAcast. I posted a picture of it. I really actually deeply love this deck, this teamer deck that I made.
Nice.
Sultai, my thoughts on Sultai is that it's very good and that you can build a pretty good Sultai deck that can blank a lot of other decks with not the greatest cards in the world. You don't need the greatest cards in the world to win with Sultai. And it wants cards like Seek the Horizon, Scout the Borders.
Yeah. So they're not traditionally good cards.
Right.
But inside of the Sultai shell, they're doing really good work.
Right. So like a cream filling is not good on its own, but when it's inside a candy shell.
Okay, you're super wrong about that.
You just want to eat a plain cream filling?
Yeah, it's like pudding.
Without the chocolate around it?
Do I want to eat pudding? Yes.
Oh, weird. I want the chocolate around
it. You don't want to eat pudding? If I handed you a vanilla pudding cup right now, you'd be like, no, Megan.
I would
not
eat that.
Ugh, you're weird.
So there's even a card that a lot of people are like, this card looks like it sucks because it does absolutely nothing, which is one in a blue, and you get to look at the top 5 cards.
Tygum Scheming.
Yeah, and you can rearrange them. So keep any number of them on top of your deck and put the rest into your graveyard.
Yeah, man.
And this card is actually very key in the Sultai strategy. I found it helps turn on your delve, and also it's really cheap.
Yeah, it's also really great in the late game. I got blown out with this card in a couple of games that went long a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Because my opponent would basically, at that point, was just using it to filter through lands.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, he put like 3 lands in his graveyard. And I was like, well, shit, he's about to draw 2 spells in a row now.
There you go.
You know, that sucks. Well, in the meantime, I'm just left up to plain old chance.
Yeah, so that's my draft updates. Megan and I got into a fisticuffs about the card Dragon Grip.
Yeah, not a good card.
And I think it's a good card.
Situationally good. I will give you that it is situationally good.
Okay, let me adjust my statement. I think it's only good in teamer. You don't want it in any other clan.
It's only good specifically in a teamer deck that has lots of ferocious enablers.
Well, what kind of teamer deck are you building that doesn't?
One that has a lot of Force Aways.
Oh.
Jeskai Wind Scouts.
Oh. I'm getting in there with those birds.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Alfred Hitchcock's
birds. I'm talking about mostly a teamer deck that actually is more like a Jeskai deck, but happens to be mostly base
blue-green. Oh, blue-red. Okay.
But there's a splash of green.
Okay.
A splash of white.
So share with us your terrific draft stories, please. Send us an email, magicthematuring@gmail.com, or just tweet at us, which is a faster and more efficient way to get in touch. And you can follow the whole Magic community on Twitter @MTAcast.
I'm now going to tell you the story of why Hawaiians love spam.
Okay, let's hear it.
So, first of all, you need to know that Hawaii consumes 7 million cans of spam a year.
Sick. Where are they putting all that spam?
7 million. Hawaii started eating spam because in World War II, GIs were often served spam because it was, you know, it's a great thing to be able to...
It keeps,
exactly. You don't have to refrigerate it. It has a really long shelf life. You know, you can send it overseas with troops. They'll be able to eat it.
Yeah.
So during World War II, spam provided 15 million cans per week.
Whoa.
To Allied troops.
They must have some serious plumbing over there.
Oh, my God. So, fun fact, spam stands for spiced ham.
Yes.
But the army soldiers would often refer to it as special army meat.
I sometimes refer to soldiers as special army meat. You know what I mean?
So basically the idea was that it just sort of like filtered through from the soldiers that were stationed in the Pacific.
So it just kept happening. They got used to it.
Well, basically, like, yeah, all of these soldiers were stationed in the Pacific and all of this spam was being shipped to them. And it sort of also made its way into the diet of all of the people who were already living in the Pacific. So all of the native Hawaiians.
Got on the spam train.
Yeah, exactly. Joined the spam train.
Wow.
They have spam sushi.
What does that mean?
It's really gross. It's sushi made with spam.
Yeah, but okay. I was going to say, is the spam not cooked?
What? It doesn't have to be.
Oh, God. That sounds really gross. Cold spam. Not a lot sounds worse.
Oh, with rice and seaweed paper?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Okay.
There you go. In the territory of Guam, each person consumes 16 cans of spam a year on average.
Wow. There you go. That's a lot, too. Well, kids, if you've got some sweet spam recipes, send them our way, as previously mentioned, MTAcast on Twitter.
That's our show this week.
That's it. That's all she wrote. And by wrote, I mean talked. That's all we talked.
That is exactly all we talked. Mm-hmm. If you would like to get in contact with us, as we mentioned before, you can send us an email at magicktheamaturing@gmail.com. Tweet at us at MTAcast.
You can also say hi to us on Magic the Onlines. I'm horny_unicorny.
And I'm Ice Cream Socialist.
Thanks to everybody who said hi, by the way. Love hearing from you guys online. It's really cool.
It's real nice.
You can always find our show online at magicktheamaturing.com, themeatery.org, through iTunes, or through Stitcher, really easy way, as well as mtgcast.com.
Yes. Even if you don't listen to our podcast through themeatery.org, I recommend giving us a follow on there, because then you can see occasional articles we post, or our pro tour bingo.
That's right.
Which we do for each pro tour, which is a lot of fun.
Sweet pro tour bingo.
Yeah, so check that out over there.
TheMeatery.org. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, hit us up on patreon.com/mtacast and throw a buck our way. We would really appreciate it.
So until you hear from us next, may the force be with you.
May the force away be with you.
And also with you.